this meeting and introduce the speaker this morning. We had about 12 tapes submitted for our main speakers, and as the committee listened to them, it became quite obvious who our speakers were going to be. And this was actually the very first speaker we picked. There was no contention. It was a unanimous vote when they heard this lead. The speaker spoke out at a retreat in Ohio that I was at last year, and that's the tape that went in, and it touched everyone's heart. I don't remember when I first met her. It's been quite a few years now. I never did get to see enough of her, because she always lifts my spirit every time I see her. And then she went and moved out of the state. And you know what? I think I've seen her more now since she moved than I did when she lived in Pittsburgh. I know God put her in my life for a reason. And part of that reason is sitting right next to her right now. Her husband has been a true inspiration to me in my recovery. And every time I hear him share, it's awesome. And then sitting next to them are some other people that I met. They put on, their area puts on the second best event in NA, the Tri-County Area Retreat. And I'll be attending that again for the fourth year in a row. It's an awesome event. I look forward to it. Every time I've heard her share, something has come out of her mouth that I know God sent directly there for me. She always touches my heart. And like I said, that lead out in Ohio really got to me. And I know I'm going to hear something special today, and I'll probably break my promise and probably end up crying again at some point. Because I know when she shares her experience, strength, and hope, it comes from her heart, and I guarantee it'll touch yours if you keep your mind open. And with that, I'd like to give you Louise M. from the Tri-County area in Maryland.
Hi, everybody. I'm an addict. My name's Louise. My home group is Chaptico Under the Stars. Like Rich said, it's in the Tri-County of Southern Maryland area, and that's in the Chesapeake and Potomac regions. I'm a crier, too, and But you know what? My heart's so filled with joy. I want to thank and acknowledge the Laurel Mountain Highlands area. As we were reading the readings, I really always try to focus on the readings. I don't think I can hear them enough. But I was looking up at the banners. I remember pulling into the first one. I was on my little Virago, my little 535cc motorcycle. And I remember exactly where I parked, and it was really small. And there was one, like, midnight meeting, I think I was asked to share at, and there was, like, three of us there around a fire, and it was cool. That was cool. And I think I've hit every single one. My mind is shot. I'm going to warn you now. My memory is shot. I debated about what I wanted to share or how I wanted to share. Sometimes I really try to focus heavily on my experience with the steps and the traditions, and but, you know, when Rich let me know that they asked if I could be the Sunday speaker. What came to my heart was, and what I'm going to try to do is just really share what I've learned here. Because it still serves me well. And so there are going to be things that I've learned. There's going to be some things that I've learned differently. There's going to be some stuff that I forgot and I'm relearning. But if you would help me, please take a moment of silence. I'd like us to all just please take a moment of silence to remember why exactly we are here today. Thank you. I was looking at the banners, and then I was looking at this year's, and I love this year's because it's black and blue, and those are my two favorite colors. And they've been my favorite colors for a long, 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 long time. When I was younger, it used to be yellow, green, and blue. Then over time, it morphed to black and blue. And it was some point in my recovery journey, which to me is a journey not just of learning to live. It's a journey of healing. It's a journey of creation. I realized that my favorite colors were black and blue because that's how I saw my soul. I really felt like my soul was black and blue. And for a long time, even in recovery, I thought that's all it would ever be. For that long time, even in recovery, what this program and you people gave me was the ability to live with my soul black and blue. Which in and of itself, if that's all I ever got from you, from this program, never could I repay the debt. Never. One of the things that I've learned, and some of the stuff that I've learned, kind of, I don't want to say goes contrary to some of our literature, but it, you know, when we read our traditions and it says, most of us, don't kind of learn about the traditions until we get involved with service. And I can only share my story. My story, I can't change my story. I'm honest as I can be about my story today. Where and when I got clean, there was no NA. I'd been exposed to it in Pittsburgh early on, 78, 79, 80, early 80s. But I wasn't ready. And where and when I got clean, the only fellowship around was AA. And there were alcoholics who took me under their wing, loved me for the addict that I was, and taught me solid spiritual principles that we live by today. I live by today. Anyway, I try to the best of my ability. And before they stressed any of the steps to me, they stressed the first tradition. They didn't want me as an addict coming into their fellowship where they have a singleness of purpose in their heart. They have a singleness of purpose. We're here to help alcoholics recover from the disease of alcoholism. And it's a deadly disease, just like addiction is. It's all addiction to me today. But, I mean, I didn't know nothing then. All I knew was, at that point, I had been incarcerated. I just kind of got out. I've been incarcerated for 20 months. In a therapeutic community. If any of you want to know what that's about, you can talk to me after the meeting. We don't have stuff like that around today, not to the extent that it was back in the 80s and earlier. But they didn't want me as an addict coming in. They just wanted, basically what they taught me was respect. I learned that my life depended on the group. And I still hold that true today. My life depends on the strength of our groups. I love how it says it in our, I think it's in our first tradition where it talks about our groups will perish. You know, and our members will die. Even with strong groups, our members die. Let alone all the people who have any, who don't, so who was I talking to recently? Who, there's some guy who's like in his 50s. Who recently came to some, has been coming around to our meetings, he'd never heard of Narcotics Anonymous. You know? That to me is this is my nature. That's a challenge to me. Like, I take that as a challenge. We need to let people know we do recover. Because we do. We're living proof. We're living proof. I loved how last night, the clean time was, what, 4,000-some years or whatever it was. 9 months in one day. That one day is what I heard. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry. That one day. That's all any of us got. That's all any of us have. There's times where there'll be some younger people, I don't mean young in age, young in time, in meetings who say, like, I only have 30 days or I only have 56 days. And I always say, what are you talking about, only? Like, that's a miracle. A day clean for any of us is a miracle. Like, be proud of your clean time. And yet I found for the longest time, I hesitated to share how much time I had. And I know the reason why that is. Again, I got clean in Colorado. When I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, I got clean in Colorado. When I had 6 years clean, about 6 years clean, I moved back to Pittsburgh. My story's really long. You know, sometimes I moved back to Pittsburgh and I had 6 years clean, and that was a big deal back then when I moved back. I got clean in 1984. And, like, I know my predecessors, Maggie, Dennis, Phil, you know, Steve, my predecessors in Pittsburgh were numbered. And I remember, without people even having know who I was, it wasn't about who Louise was. It was about, here's this chick with 6 years clean. And I remember there was one guy specifically, Wally. Any of you guys know Wally? He's dead now. He quizzed me on the steps. Like, you say you have 6 years clean. I want, talk to me about your sixth step. Talk to me about this stuff. And it was funny. I remember just kind of laughing and sharing with him, but kind of laughing, like, oh, I got to prove myself to this guy. There were other people who I found, because I had 6 years clean, they didn't talk to me for whatever reason. And then there was other people that's all that mattered. Hey, she's got 6 years clean. I want her to sponsor me. They didn't know who I was. They didn't know what I still might have been struggling with or whatever. You know, they didn't know if I had a concept of God or not, if I'd worked any steps or not. Some of us can stay clean for quite a while without working any steps, minus maybe one, maybe two, maybe three. I love what my husband said. He goes, you know, most of us can only hold our spiritual breath for so long. And that's what happened for me, really, more and more. In fact, even recently, kind of like what Bob was talking about last night. As I continue to grow in recovery, I'm sorry, I have a thing about microphones. Sorry. As I continue to grow in recovery, I find I can inhale and exhale spiritually, sometimes more deeply. And I'm kind of going through that now, and I'll probably touch on that. But so what I learned early on was really, it's really about group unity. What I bring to the group, what I can receive freely, lovingly from the group, because that was really hard for me. I don't want to owe you guys nothing, you know. I owe you my life today. I'm forever grateful, and I try to repay it in the way you taught me now. But it's all about today, just for today. I still practice the same basics that got me here, that keep me here. I have a home group that I'm involved in that I love. We meet under the outside when the weather permits. I have a sponsor who I talk to regularly, who I love. And interesting enough, one of the things that I learned, again, so I came in 23 years old. I'm short. I'm little. I look younger than I am. I'm going to be 50. When I was 23, I still looked like I was like 15. I felt even younger. Drugs retard our emotional development, I believe. And here I was sitting in meetings, literally smoke-filled basements with, to me, old men drinking coffee. That was my reality. Do you know to this day, I count the ratio of men and women in meetings. To this day, my home group on Thursday night, there were 14 men and 11 women. Wow. Do you know what that does for me? I had to learn early on to focus on the similarities and not the differences, because I didn't have that much on the outside in common with those old guys. And so we were smokers then, boy. We could smoke in meetings then. Ashtray saved my life. That was my first service position, was empty in the ashtrays. I learned to focus on the similarities. And when I looked for them, they were there. They were there. And there's a lot of external symptoms of addiction. And there's a couple good jokes about the difference between alcoholics and addicts that I won't get into because I'm not a good joke teller. My husband's a great joke teller. All he does all day is crack jokes. But what I focused on more was the internal similarities, the feelings of hopelessness, of desperation, of worthlessness, you know, of just being different. And no matter what I did, man, I just felt like I couldn't catch a break. And that was on the one side. But then there was this other side. See, I'm like, my ego can swing to both extremes. And I really pray hard. The core of our disease, I believe, and I learned here, is self-centered fear. You know, and I really want to say this because this is something that's really been hitting me hard lately. So this self-centered fear for years. I mean, I've been doing this 26 plus years. Years. Sometimes when I say years, I mean decades. I've been working on this fear, right? Getting over this fear, having faith. That's it right there. What I find is if I work on, instead of the fear part of that self-centered fear, if I work on the self-centered part, the fear evaporates all by itself. Because when I ease myself out of self-centeredness, or my creator actually really more, much more so than I do, I'm an active participant in my own recovery. My creator cannot do this without my cooperation. But when I ease myself with the help of my higher power out of this self-centeredness, more onto a track of God-centeredness, of service, love and service is the best way I've ever heard our 12 steps boiled down in a nutshell. Love and service. My fear evaporates. I have a lot of fear of doing this, getting up in front of a crowd. Not only, I love one-on-one. I'll share with anybody one-on-one. That's my favorite place to be. I like two-way communication, and this is like one way. And I like to respond to you, and I like to see how you're responding to me, and it's harder for me to do in a crowd. But I lose my train of thought a lot. So if I take long, deep breaths, I brought water this time, so I can, like, take a drink of water. My mind works. It sometimes doesn't race, even when it's not racing. I still have a few things sometimes percolating going on. What I've learned is that through learning to look for the similarities and not the differences, and that most of the time the greatest similarities aren't the external stuff. It's not the external. My sponsor has never been married. She doesn't have any children. She has a career, but it's not something that's ever been a major focus in her life. I want to say extremely religious, but without any kind of negative overtone that might give anybody. Devoted. She's devoted to her God. And I'm married. I have kids. I have a career that's pretty intense sometimes. And yet she still has everything I want and everything I need, no matter what I call her with. And I've learned that sometimes I don't call her with anything except to say, hi, I love you, how are you? How are you? You know? Because I love her. I love her. I want to make sure her spirit continues to get filled. And she tells me often I feel her spirit, which gives me great joy because mine overflows with the input that she gives me. There's days where I can literally feel her holding my hand, like we do before we work a step and we pray. I can feel her holding me, you know, and we're 350 miles apart. That doesn't come quickly. that develops over time. And as addicts, we want everything now. Sometimes we don't want to work for a gift. And like a good addict, sometimes one of the things I've found about myself is I can even take that to an extreme. I can work to an extreme. I have to work harder, harder, harder. That was one of the things that I really had to learn in my sixth step. I had to learn I could not, of my own free will, change my own defects of character. And I had to humbly ask my Creator to remove the defects that my Creator saw fit to remove, which I learned weren't necessarily the ones I had on my nice little list that I wanted removed. Sooner the better, thanks. You know? But in hindsight, because I still struggle with, the greatest thing that I pray, I'm trying to think if I still pray for this or not. I think in my heart, even though I might not formulate the words in my head or out loud, the people I pray with, I think in my heart I still pray. I came from a very loving, big Italian family. I'm the fifth of seven kids, one boy, six girls, boom, 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 boom. But it left a lot of scars. And especially because of my nature, I wasn't capable of feeling love in the ways that I think some people can. And there was some abuse that occurred as a child that wasn't vocalized within this family unit. And then there was some abuse. One was like an SVU on the street type. I mean, it had nothing to do with anything except for I was in this spot on earth and so was this other person and they just decided to, like, they made a choice and it affected me. And it affected me really deeply. And then there was another really heavy-duty incident that I believe today, and I accept today, was a direct result of the lifestyle I was living. And it took me many, 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 many years and a lot of help both inside and outside the fellowship in the program of Narcotics Anonymous to get to a point where I don't live that stuff every day anymore. For years and years and years, I prayed that I could be relieved of that pain. And like a lot of us do when we're faced with powerless situations sometimes, or at least I did, I somehow made it my fault. Somehow something I either did or didn't do caused this. Or I caused so much pain to some people that this is really painful. God's way of getting back at me or punishing me or trying to teach me something. I don't believe in my God like that today. But one of the things that I've learned in recovery is that this specific thing that I'm talking about is on many occasions the one thing that I am uniquely able to have as a recovering addict, that there's another woman struggling and our Creator's put us together and I'm able to give them some hope. That we can find a way to live with this stuff even if we can't necessarily ever accept it. I shouldn't even get into that whole discussion. What I've learned here is the importance of continuing to show up. Just show up. Suit up and show up, we say. You know? And not only has that served me well in Narcotics Anonymous, it serves me well outside of Narcotics Anonymous. Recovery's always been my priority. It continues to be my priority no matter what's going on in my life. The most important thing is my recovery. So much so that I It almost pains me to say that when it comes to my daughters. I have two beautiful daughters who are now 22 and 23, getting ready to turn 23 and 24. And there were times throughout their life where I was, up until about 2 years ago, I was a 5-meeting-a-week addict minimum, recovering addict. I went to at least minimum 5 meetings a week. And I needed that. That was what I needed. Our basic text talks about regular meeting attendance. It doesn't define it for us. We have to define it for ourselves. The first step teaches me I have to take personal responsibility for my recovery, which means I have to define what that means. In the third step, it talks about turning my will and my life over to the care of a higher power. But again, my higher power can't do this stuff without my cooperation. So I have to learn how to start caring for myself, too. I'm not going to be able to sit here and believe my higher power cares for me unless I'm able to start showing some self-care and unless I'm able to accept some of the care you show me. And my regular was 5 meetings a week, minimum. And my daughters paid a price for that. They never saw me high, ever. And I pray every day they don't. But they pay a price for my addiction because there's no cure. I have a daily reprieve. I'm not going to stay clean today because of the step I worked yesterday. My 26 and a half years aren't going to mean shit tomorrow. Because this is what's happened to me. The few times that I really, really rubber hit the road and I wanted to use, or my body was screaming for a drug like I'd already taken one, it blindsided me every time. I didn't see it coming. I turned around and boom, I was faced with a big decision. And I'm grateful that every time that's happened to me, I was able to make the decision that I believe in my heart is best for me. Not all of us do. I had a former sponsee of mine, a girl I love who I still maintain a lot of contact with in Maryland, text me. She said one of her sponsees, when I coughed, had the drug in her hand and didn't use. Is that a relapse? And I said, no, I don't consider that a relapse. I would use it as an opportunity to focus on some big-time first-step stuff to maybe help her see that she has some kind of power working in her life that saved her that day, you know? I can't play on the tracks like that, though, a lot. I'll get hit. It's not even so much I'll get hit. I'll slam my face into the train. That's what I do. That's what I do. Self-centered fear and self-hatred is what my addiction is all about. Self, 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 self. Right? So I don't even see all this other stuff going on around me. Pittsburgh. There's a gentleman who's dead now, who strongly influenced that city. And he would sing a lot of songs to little children. And when my little children were growing up, I let them watch TV of that show all the time. And there's one song that I love, which talks about, did you know it's okay to wonder? There are so many wonderful things. Did you know that it's okay to marvel? There are so many marvelous things. And my pain, this pain that I felt like almost I was born with, which is sad to think about, but that's kind of how I felt. I really feel. I was born into this family with this pain, and then it just kept growing and growing and growing. And then, boy, add drugs? Forget it. And my pain and my addiction, I couldn't see all these wonderful, marvelous things. And the most wonderful and marvelous things that I was blinded to were you and your spirit. Your love. How we together could share and do something wonderful. I was so touched when I'm so bad. I can't remember anything anymore. I can't remember this gentleman's name who's been chairing and program chair. Rick. When Rick was up here, so touched so touched that, you know, he didn't even, you know, assert what he had in his heart from being a part of something greater, you know? And that's what the first tradition really taught me. I can be a member when I say I am. And those alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous, the recovering alcoholics, I should say, in Alcoholics Anonymous, allowed me, a drug addict, to be a member because I said I was. And sometimes that's a challenge here. I remember once at my home group in Sharpsburg, there was a woman who was coming regularly to our meetings who was still using, who was way out there and causing a lot of disruption, a lot of disruption. And she would ramble on and on and on and on about a lot of stuff that we would try to figure out how it related to recovery. And some of it was offending people. And we would have these group consciences about what should we do? Should we do something? Like, we felt like we should do something. We wanted to help her, but we felt this protectiveness of our home group. And our third tradition speaks for itself, you know? And am I getting it right, or is it the fifth? No, it's the third. I can't remember anything anymore. But how we talk a lot, you know, if you read our symbol and it talks about the broader our base, the higher our point of freedom, and it talks about our diversity is our strength somewhere. How welcoming, though, truly, are we to diversity? My husband's the programming chair for our retreat. Do we get a person who speaks in a normal volume? Because one of the people on the committee likes people who scream. You know? I mean, and that's one of my challenges, too. One of the things that I have a hard time with doing this kind of stuff, speaking in front of a larger group. Or a group where I know afterwards I won't be able to get to talk to you each one individually like I can at meetings in my area. At some point in time, we'll share. We'll share our lives. There might be someone out there with years and years of clean time who's going through some kind of struggle right now or some kind of life change. There might be someone out there who's debating about, like, going out and getting high right after this meeting. You know, there's and everything in between. And my desire, because I love this fellowship and I'm so grateful, and I want to, you know what, I've learned so much, and I have some really good stories. I'm not that great of a storyteller in a group, but in one-on-one, I'm a good storyteller. I'll share a lot of my stories with you. But, lost my train of thought there just a bit. I want to be able to say something from my own experience that maybe each of you could use. And I know that there's not one thing that's going to help everybody. You know? And what I usually come away with is if there was just one thing I said to one person who was hurting, again, that's more than enough. What a blessing. You know? To be able to make the light a difference in one life. My predecessors used to talk about being right-sized. And that's another reason I struggle with this. I still got an ego. That I'm part of my daily program is trying to keep my ego in check. And the best way that I've learned to do this is an experience that I had. You know, I have two beautiful daughters. And, I mean, they were beautiful from birth. And when they got, like, yay high, I started making an annual trek to the ocean with them. My parents had done that for us, and I wanted that tradition with my girls. And my youngest one is my beach bum with me. But I can vividly remember, and again, part of the reason I got really emotional was These aren't just banners representing years to me. What they are is almost a timeline of my recovery journey. The first 3 years were like the tail end of 8 or 9 years of extreme pain in recovery. I got clean, and here my analogy is my leg broke. Okay? Like a major, my femur, major bone. And you know what? I didn't have proper care. It healed, but it didn't heal right. And I had a real severe limp, and it still hurt. And like at 7, 8, 9 years clean, we had to go in and re-break that bone and try to reset it better and heal from that. And that's kind of been like my journey. So if you're in anything that kind of relates to that, you know, during that process, it was really painful and it was hard to maintain hope. And the only way I could do that was coming into rooms like this. And I want to share this little story about my daughter, and then I want to share to you another story about that kind of hope for me, and how you guys keep that hope alive. So me and my little daughter, I don't know where my oldest one was at this point, because it was just me and my little one this moment, standing up at the right where the waves come up. And, you know, there's all this other stuff going on in my life, and, you know, I'm healing, my recovery is progressing, I started school, and... you know, that was a whole new thing for me. I had barely graduated high school. I was 35, 36, something like that, going back to school, sitting in class with a bunch of kids, I felt like. And standing next to the Atlantic Ocean, I felt very small in the grand scheme of creation. And not small in a necessarily insignificant way, but just very small. I'm just another grain of sand amongst countless grains of sand. And yet, at the same time, equally true, was I was the mother to two very special young girls. And I was doing everything I could to make a difference in their life. And I was. And it has. And it continues to. And I finally understood for real, on a gut level, what my predecessors were always talking about being right-sized. I was like both of those things at the same time, in honoring that. Honoring both and honoring it together. What recovery gives me are these spiritual ideals that I can strive for. And my understanding of these truths and these ideals sometimes changes over time as I get more information or as I age and as I mature. They change or they morph a little bit, just like our addictional morph, you know? Our addiction morphed. Mine did. The very first time I ever got clean, I was 17 years old. I didn't know anything at all about Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, nothing. But I knew that I was getting high first thing in the morning, I was getting high last thing at night, and I was getting high as much as I could in between. And nobody I knew, including my siblings that used, including the people at like school that I found that used, was doing that at that point. Some of them got high a lot, but not like, and I was a big secret user. Like even then, I was ripping people off. I'm a thief, too. I have a clean date from stealing. It's just as important to me as my clean date from using. Because it's all addiction. It'll all kill me. It'll all land me in jail or dead. Even without ever picking up a drug. I believe that. But The very first time I ever quit using, within 2 weeks, I became anorexic. My body, my mind, my spirit needed some kind of an addiction, some kind of an illusion of control to function in society. And at that point, my society was very small. My society was basically my family and school. Outside of that, my parents were, my mother, I should say, really, was very, very strict. And my father is very, very disciplined. And outside of school, we really weren't allowed out because she didn't trust us. That was the message I got. So anytime I did go out, it was like I kind of proved her right in a way. But I have a hard time. I know we're supposed to be up here sharing our, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Actually, if I do want to share the what happened. When I share what it was like, I can get lost back there. And I can spend all this time. Holy crap. See? I did. Guess what? I have to share this. There's so much I want to share. Please don't think, for those of you who have that in your head, wow, that person has, like Ron, you know how lonely it can be to have 8 years clean? It's lonely being that first person standing up for clean time. I love Ron. You know, I try to be really approachable. And I love it when people don't know who I am. So, Friday night, right? We get here. We're so excited. We've been looking to this, forward to this retreat since last year's. Okay? So, I've gotten really good with packing. I've packed everything I need, right? I have a ritual. I have some rituals at night. I'm a ritualistic addict in recovery. I think rituals are good if they're healthy. Every night I tie back my hair, I wash my face, I brush my teeth, and I go to bed, pray, go to bed. And I didn't have a hair tie. And for those of you who use hair ties, you know what that means. Ah, oh, I need a hair tie. And there's hair ties everywhere. So I'm in the bathroom, and this beautiful blonde young woman races in, does something at the sink, and races out while I'm still trying to figure out where. I know I have a hair tie somewhere. Where's a hair tie? And I notice on her wrist there's a rainbow of hair ties, right? And she runs out. And I'm like, oh. And one of my struggles in recovery has been, it can still be sometimes hard to ask for help, to ask. I need something, you know? It puts me in a vulnerable position. I've gotten so much better. But anyway, it can still be easier for me to braid my hair real tight and hope it stays while I'm tossing and turning at night than to ask for a hair tie. But it's like I really am trying every day. Every day is a challenge in recovery for me. That's the way I look at it. I have to grow or I'm going to die. Bottom line. I've buried more people than I can count. My mom and dad are still alive, and I don't want them burying me like that. I don't want my kids burying me like that. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go see if she's at. This was up in the hall up there. I'm going to see if she's in that room, and if she is, I'm going to ask her. And I'm going to put you on the spot, Courtney, because I'll tell you what. I said, you know what? You might. I said, I don't know what I said. Like, you don't even know me, and this might seem like a really strange question, but I forgot a hair tie, and I didn't even have the word out of my mouth. She gets this beautiful smile on her face and whips one of her hair ties off her wrist and says, so freely, so joyfully, that like, if that's all I got this weekend, that would carry me until next year. I swear to God, the joy on your face. You know, I'd never met this woman before, but she beamed recovery to me. Sometimes our message isn't in our words. Most of the time, the message we speak isn't going to be in our words. It's how we walk. how we speak to each other. I'll never forget Carol at Sunday Go To Meeting. The topic was spirituality. And she said, "My spirituality is all about how I treat you." And I'll never forget that. For as much as all this work we can do, the bottom line is it all culminates to how we treat each other and how together we help try to carry this message so that no addict need die. Many will, but no addict need die. And how can we better challenge ourselves to let the public know we're here? That's all I got. Thank you, and I'll see you next year. Love you.